Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, whenever and wherever you happen to be listening to us in this great wide world that's brought together by the World Wide Web. We are, once again, the last three guys to do a podcast, our 20th edition here, and it is I, John Morgo, along with
Daniel Bolton
and
Leon Brown.
And we are talking all things Super Bowl. It's been 1 week since that game has been put in the books, and we're just now waking up from it. But right now, it was the New England Patriots winning that one in what is the lowest scoring Super Bowl ever. Nice win over the LA Rams, 13-3, down at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and we're getting a lot to talk about that. But first of all, guys, what I want to ask you is, even though the product on the field was not what fans wanted to see, and I want to separate the game from what the fans wanted to see, because I think this was an excellent game. I'm going to say why I thought it was an excellent game in a moment. But let's separate that from what Atlanta did to host the Super Bowl. I did not hear one negative comment about Atlanta's hosting the Super Bowl. Not one. Not the experience at the Congress Center, not the traffic, nothing. Atlanta took this Super Bowl hosting duties, and it went off without a glitch. Do you guys agree or not?
Yes, I agree 100%, John. And I'll tell you why. And this is the third time we've actually hosted Super Bowl. We hosted it back in, I think, 94. I think it was a 94 Super Bowl with the Cowboys and the Bills.
Right.
Then it was the Titans and the Rams, that Super Bowl. That was when Ray Lewis was
doing his thing.
Did his thing down here. And now you have this year. I thought that Atlanta did a tremendous job. I mean, especially when you talk about the traffic, of course, hell, I work downtown
right in
Atlanta, and it wasn't that bad. It was just typical Atlanta, Georgia traffic
right that
you have going in the mornings, right? I thought it was just great, the experience of you and I were down there Monday for opening media day. I thought that was just a great
thing
to – that was very fun. That was tremendous. You just didn't hear any bad thing. The crime rate, you didn't hear anything about crime rates going up or anything
like that. Nobody did anything stupid on the teams.
Right. Nobody did anything dumb on the teams because, of course, this is Atlanta, Georgia. This is the strip club capital of the world, right? So you would expect for that to happen. Now, the strip clubs were open.
They were.
You better believe they were open.
They were doing some pretty good business from what I heard.
But they did a hell of a job, man. And everybody who participated, from the strip clubs to the clubs to the World Congress Center hosting the Super Bowl experience to the State Farm Arena opening their doors up, it was just a phenomenal thing. And you know, you tip your hats off to everybody who was involved in it, the volunteers. Mayor Keisha Bottoms was probably had a lot to do with it as well for hosting. So it was just a great experience to be a part of it. And Atlanta, Georgia did a great job. I'm so proud of my city.
A friend of mine works in the promotions department at CNN. Mm-hmm. They made his department work from home that week.
Wow.
All non-essential personnel from CNN were working from home to cut down on the traffic.
And we had a couple of people at my job work from home as
right, well.
So that was a good thing.
And I took MARTA.
Yes, there you go.
Yes.
Now, how was MARTA? Was MARTA good?
MARTA was fine. The trains were running on a pretty good schedule. They had more trains pressed into
the I would have expected something else.
It was something else.
Uh-oh.
It was something else.
Well, the buses were another story, but I didn't take the bus. I went right to the train station in Chambly and took that down. And once you get on, it's 20 minutes and you're there.
Okay.
I don't even bother going on the east-west line. It's quicker for me, and Daniel will attest to this because that's what we did on Monday night. It's easier just to walk.
Just to walk, yeah.
It's a half mile.
I walk from my job. Actually walk from Broad Street to get down there. So
it's a half mile from Five Points to State Farm Arena, and it's just quicker than going up and waiting the 10 minutes for the train.
Absolutely.
Man, let me tell you, I got off work at 5 o'clock on Saturday over in Decatur.
Yeah.
It took me 4 hours to get to Norcross.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm talking about that train was packed like no other. I'm talking about it was so packed. I think
so. You caught it at the end of the week. So you caught it on Saturday
night. I was there. Matter of fact, I'll say this. Saturday night, the train was actually more packed than it was on Super Bowl day.
Right, because everyone was going to the parties.
To the parties.
Yeah, I'm talking about.
There was that big party at Atlantic Station, Shaq's big house.
Shaq's Funhouse had, I think, Flair, well, Ric Flair didn't have his party until Super Bowl Sunday. Right. So,
guys, the train was so packed that it allegedly tipped the scale. It tipped the tracks.
Wow.
Yes. Matter of fact, you know, you take the train north to, going to on the Gold Line, which is from Five Points to Doraville.
Doraville, yeah.
Excuse me, you had to get off at Brookhaven because, you couldn't travel between Brookhaven and Doraville because I think it was something about a fire or the train had tipped or something like that.
Okay.
So it was everybody's like 1,000 people at Brookhaven Station catching buses to different places of North DeKalb. Absolutely. It was interesting.
Whatever they did, it was fine when I went on Sunday.
Yeah, man, Sunday I had an easier time. When I had to go to work Sunday night at 10, it was actually pretty clear.
Okay.
It was, it was clear. It seems like Marta was prepared for that one, but Saturday night, it was ridiculous. It was worse than the Atlanta United title game.
Okay.
That was bad too. You never knew that Atlanta had so many soccer fans.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
They
about
do.
Atlanta United.
Yeah.
And I think having a great team is part of that. People want to support that. But yeah, soccer is one of those year-round sports here. As high school soccer starting to get swinging, so I think that's Atlanta is no doubt the soccer capital of the United States.
Absolutely, Atlanta. Yeah. They actually the United brought the city out. They definitely brought the city out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it rivaled that of a football game, to be honest with you. So, you know, kudos to them. But yeah, it was definitely an experience. I was about 2 hours late to work.
So the question now is, is that going to be enough to put Atlanta in the permanent rotation?
I think it should be. I think the one thing that probably would have stopped the committee
mm-hmm.
from choosing Atlanta, and I think they were worried about the weather. But believe it or not, by some miracle, it was hot that day. It was like maybe in the late, mid-60s.
It was in the 60s, and they opened the roof.
Man. So and it's crazy for it to be in February. Around my birthday. My birthday was last week, folks.
They're still accepting donations.
Exactly. I think that would be the only thing people were worried about, and guess what? It didn't happen.
Right.
It didn't happen because we actually closed down Georgia State because we were in a state of emergency on Wednesday, I believe.
It was Tuesday. They thought that we were going to have like maybe a half inch of snow, but it never materialized.
It never materialized.
And once again, we were the laughingstock of the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what, though? All the bad weather that we were supposed to get during the Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
we're getting that now.
Yeah.
I can handle the 30 degrees. I can handle that. Just no snow, please.
Yeah, no snow.
No snow because we have no idea what to do with it.
Exactly.
We cannot drive.
We can't drive in snow down here, folks.
We don't know how to handle it. It's,
you know, we got listeners from all over the country from what I've seen. So, folks, down here in Georgia, 2 inches of snow, we can't drive.
We can't drive. City shuts down.
Especially if our New York listeners are listening to us, man. That's going to be the trippy part about it.
Well, I did find something else. I was telling Leon and Daniel this story. I won't get into the whole story. But when I went down for Super Bowl experience, I wound up walking about 7 miles. And to put that number in perspective, from my condo to my work, it's just over 5 miles. So basically, right. I can walk to work.
Yes, yeah, you can.
Exactly.
You can.
I can. I don't want to, but I can. And by the way, my birthday's in 5 weeks from right now.
Yeah, so okay, there you go.
So if people want to start planning a gift right now, I would not
get
say
a cash
no to
app,
it.
John.
Exactly. All right, so we talked about how Atlanta did hosting, mm-hmm. and again, the city went all out. Even the Bible thumpers on the street corners were happy. They were very happy too. But here now, this is what I'm going to say to you guys.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I'm going to say. I'm going to say that this game was a great game because it was not a rout.
Yeah.
It was close until the end.
Yeah.
Sure, everyone wants to see a 33-23 game or even a 23-13 game, but there is no difference between that and a 13-3 game. All we were saying, guys, the week before the Super Bowl is we want a good game, but I think what we got a close game, and close games are good games. Even, I mean, even if you have certain games that go 0-0 at the end of regulation, like that Virginia Tech game a couple years ago, people are saying, oh, that's a horrible game. Well, it's close. You don't know who's going to win until the very end. Mm-hmm. And that, in my opinion, makes a good game.
And, you know, as people are going to say, as bad as the Rams look, but let's use this term. As inexperienced as the Rams look, because again, listen, this thing here is baby steps, man. When we talk about winning and losing, and winning playoff games and losing football games, and I bring this up millions of times. Last year, they were the number 3 seed. They lost to the defending NFC champions, which were the Atlanta Falcons. Then, and they come in next year saying, okay, this isn't going to happen again, right? They jump out, they're 8-0. On the season, bam, they look like clear Super Bowl contenders. They get into the playoffs. They run the football well. C.J. Anderson is running the football well over Dallas. A Dallas Cowboy team who, man, you don't dominate their line of scrimmage like that. They had the best offensive line the last 5 years, and you don't just dominate that, right? And then you go into the NFC Championship game. Of course, you've got the play that essentially cost the New Orleans Saints a Super Bowl berth, right. Which I don't think that happened. I'm the same way. Yeah, number two, I mean, I'm not going to even get into that. Okay, let's just go to the state with the Rams here. And then you get in here and you only score 3 points. But listen, it's because of Bill Belichick is on that sideline, man.
Absolutely.
You cannot prepare for someone that prepares 4 quarters. You get what I'm saying? He prepares constantly for 60 minutes. He watches for the adjustment. He lives to make adjustments, and that's what he did. He understood that he came in here, he had the hottest quarterback, he had probably the best running back on the other side, and he had Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh. And what happened with Suh and the difference between Goff and Brady, yes, they were able to get to Brady, but not as often as the Patriots were able to get to Jared Goff. They got to him every single chance he got, and they made him look like a rookie. They made him look like he was a novice in this thing, right?
Right.
Just 3 points. But guess what, though? It was still a close game because the Rams defense and Wade Phillips called a great game. All but 4 plays he missed. He missed about 4 plays. 2 of them were running, and he missed that play to Gronk. But the key element was, and he ended up being a Super Bowl MVP, Julian Edelman, they had no answer for him. And I don't care how good a defense you have, man. If you just don't have a defense for somebody who can run a route as good as Julian Edelman, it's going to be tough. It's going to be hard. And that's what happened there. He was the factor. Do I think he should have been Super Bowl MVP? I think it's a 50-50 shot. But he was MVP simply because he made, what, 11 catches in that game?
Yeah, 12 for 141.
12 for 141. Thank you. Mm-hmm. He had 12 catches for 141 yards. Of course, you have to get a man Super Bowl MVP. But somebody on that defense, probably a Stephon Gilmore, who got the interception that won the game, but he was also very effective out there. Von Oy was all over the place. Dante Hightower made some plays. So, I mean, those guys could have very well got it too. But all in all, I thought it was a great game, like John mentioned. Great defensive battle, great technique. McVay does not coach like he's not a defensive tactic. He's looking to score 21 points on you early.
Right. And here's another stat for you guys. That 13 points is the fewest points that New England scored in a win all season long. So don't tell me that the Rams didn't deserve to be there.
Exactly. Yes, and everybody is saying, oh, man. And Leon, I'm going to get to you in a minute.
The Saints would have given them a better game. Don't tell me the Rams didn't deserve to be there because they did.
I've always said this. I've said this, and I'm going to let Leon have the floor. I've said this. There's only one team that I can remotely say that would have beaten that New England team that night, and that's the Dallas Cowboys, because they can control the clock.
Okay.
They know how to run the football, and they can control that clock, and they probably can force a little bit more than the Rams or anybody could. The Saints would have been shut out. I've been on record saying that. About 20 teams could have been shut out against that New England defense that night. That night. We're not talking about all season long or whatever. That night, that team would have been beaten by anybody else.
I think, I don't know, I got a different opinion about that. I think Drew Brees might have been able to compete.
I don't think so.
The reason why, because I think the Rams had like 8 straight punts.
Yes, they did.
Oh, that's disgusting on a professional level.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, somebody needs to be talked to. But I look at, like, based on what I observed, it's not just the Rams that would have got beat. You know, the majority of young quarterbacks in this league would have got done like that.
That's right.
Because what Bill Belichick seen was a fact. He's like, you know what? I'm playing against a quarterback that's been in this league for less than 24 months.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, he has not competed against million-dollar defenses and million-dollar minds.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about the brain trust that is the New England Patriots coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, shoot. We're gonna come to line of scrimmage one formation, and then we're gonna switch the formation.
Yes, okay. And you had no idea what to do with that,
right? And that's why I say, if now someone like veteran quarterback like Drew Brees would have seen that and switched his offense up, like, okay, cool, we switch his offense up. But then you have someone like Jared Goff, who, you know, he's been in the league for less than 24 months. He's a new, you know, he's pretty much fresh. His offensive coordinator is thinking for him. So if he goes out there, he's like, yo, we're going to go off and run a rollout or off tackle. Jared Goff, who he's a novice, he doesn't know how to really read professional defenses like that. And until he becomes literate from that point of view, which I know he's right now as we're speaking, he's in that film room as he should be.
And Sean McVay's pretty much ordering him in that film room.
Absolutely. You got to know how to read. You got to know how to read that. That's what made Peyton Manning so dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Peyton Manning go out there and call his own plays. He'll see what's going on defense. I got a better play.
Okay, so here's my counter argument to that. Do you remember that year when Manning and the Broncos were rolling? They went to the Super Bowl. Who did they get throttled by?
Oh yeah,
the Seahawks. That the defense,
Legion,
right?
The Legion
of Boom, and that Seahawks defense. What I'm saying is that I don't care what quarterback is out there. If that defense is as great as it is, there's nobody that was going to be able to stop them. And like I said, Drew Brees, who was a great quarterback, Sean Payton, who was a great head coach, those last couple of weeks, they didn't impress me.
After they lost to Dallas,
they were exposed already. And the same thing that the Patriots were doing, they were running up the gut. They were coming up the middle. They were blitzing up the middle on third down, on second down sometimes, making it very uncomfortable for Mr. Goff. That's what Dallas did to New Orleans in week 13 or 14. Made it very uncomfortable for him. Why? Because they were pressing up front. And Michael Thomas didn't do all that great. And they couldn't get it to Michael Thomas. So what they were doing, they was running like little gadget screens and gadget plays, but guess what? The Dallas Cat defense was eating that up. And that's why I say New England was so sound, and they understood what it was. They understood what that situation was about. That's why I say I don't think the Saints would have had a shot. That's the only reason why I say the Saints wouldn't have had a shot. Other than that, you know, go ahead. We can say that. But that night, New England was just head above good.
Yeah.
And Brady wasn't even great.
No, he wasn't.
That's the thing.
That's the worst statistic. This right here was the worst. We're talking about a quarterback that that went up and down the field five times last year.
Yes.
In the Super Bowl. Well, I think that might have been the highest output of passing yards
in a losing effort.
Right. And also, guys, Jared Goff has never faced New England in the regular season.
Exactly.
And he won't until not next season, but the season after.
But the season after that. That's right. That's right. But guess who he does face? He will be in town next year.
Yep.
He plays Atlanta here. That's going to be an interesting matchup. Can't wait for that one.
See, the Rams are going to be a force because, you know, two years ago, mm-hmm. they took an embarrassing loss from a team that hopped on the plane and flew 3,000 miles and smacked them around.
Right?
They took it personal, right?
Right. And that was the team that everybody wanted to see in the playoffs, and they were the number three seed. Like we're not the Rams. You know?
Right.
So you think that this Super Bowl will have the same effect on that young team? Because, I mean, it was embarrassing. They were embarrassed again. This right here was actually – what was more embarrassing? What happened 2 years ago or what happened this year?
Oh, I still say what happened 2 years ago.
Two years ago.
Because we were still up 28-3
mm-hmm.
at one point in time. You don't lose that kind of Super Bowl. Hey, listen, I don't feel bad for the Rams, man. We lost a 25-point lead. That was embarrassing because you're on such a high in the fourth quarter. If you're just a football fan, but if you're like me and you and John, and I'm sitting there and I'm watching it, at my brother-in-law's house. I'm sitting there watching the game, and I'm just quiet.
Right.
Because you already get that eerie feeling that this is going to actually happen, mm-hmm. you know? And, oh, man, it was so terrible that, you know, normally I stay and I watch the MVP presentation and all of that. I told my wife, she was my fiance at the time, I told my wife, I said, no, I don't want to stay here and watch this because Michael Strahan is about to pass my trophy off like I played in the Super Bowl, right?
Right.
My trophy off to that team
uh-huh.
that did not deserve to win that Super Bowl because we had them. We had them, and it was just like, I don't get it. I don't understand. I don't understand. I think that would be worse. Listen, the Rams never got off the snide, even when they were. It was 3-0 at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
New England. And it was still close. It was still a close game, but they just couldn't make the throw. Goff had Brandon Cooks wide open in the back of the end zone, and what happened? McCourty came and broke it up.
Right.
Right? He was under duress. It was third and whatever, and Stephon Gilmore makes the game-winning interception. And then what happens? Sometimes your defense just can't hold, right? And you've been trying to hold, and you really couldn't do it. What happens? Gronk gets a 25, 26 yard pass, which he really was a non factor in the game. Sony Michel, UGA product, boy, did he look impressive, right? You know, did he look great? You know, so listen, man, like you said, John, it was a great game. It was fun to watch. My wife likes high-scoring affairs, and she was upset because she's a girly fan. She's a Rams fan, actually. Okay. She's the Falcons first, but then she roots for the Rams. Yeah. And, you know, that was just a bad part. Just a bad part.
I know Sean McVay. Sorry.
Yeah.
You know, Sean McVay had been looking at Matt LaFleur like, I might have threw the clipboard at him during the halftime. Like, you can't figure nothing out?
And isn't he? He's leaving. I think he just picked up a coaching job.
I think he did, too.
Oh. Yeah.
No, he's not going to Miami. Who's he going to?
No, that's Flores. Flores from the Patriots is going to Miami. Who, by the way, come on, man. What a send-off, huh?
Yep.
You know, he was the linebacker's coach, and he called the defensive plays. But what a freaking send-off, man.
If I was Sean McVay, I would tell Matt LaFleur, man, don't let the door hit you with a good Lord split you, man.
Three points. The same thing.
You couldn't figure it out.
LaFleur's going to Green Bay.
Green Bay, yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yep.
I know. Aaron Rodgers probably sitting there.
Oh, Aaron Rodgers probably sitting there probably licking his chops. Because Matt LaFleur, we don't know what he's going to be as a head coach. But, man, the last couple of years, man, he was our quarterback's coach.
He was a good guy.
3 years ago. And which actually, he was actually responsible for Matt Ryan's MVP season.
Absolutely.
So,
but you on the biggest stage. Really, this is the year. He was the quarterback's coach during the collapse.
Yeah,
during the great collapse.
I know where you're going with it.
So then, so you get him on the big stage. I mean, my goodness, that like the stock market crash in that Super Bowl, man.
It did.
Shoot. Then you only put up 3 points, Mac and Fur. You couldn't figure it out. You gonna let Bill Belichick do you like that again?
Again. Yeah, again. Right. Again. Oh, man.
Man, it's like, man. Who has the worst relationship with Bill Belichick? It's like either Matt LaFleur or Philip Rivers. You know what I'm saying? Because Philip Rivers got to be like 0-7.
Yes, he is. He's actually 0-7 against right. New England.
No, we're 1-7.
We're
0-7 against. Yeah, we beat him. That's how bad it is. I remember when we did it.
Well, has it been 7 straight? Y'all have lost 7 straight?
Nah, we lost 6 straight.
6 straight, okay.
It was when Brady was hurt. And you guys had Matt Castle before he went to the Chiefs.
Okay, so you have beaten the Patriots, but you've never beaten Brady.
Right.
Ah, there it is. There it goes.
Man.
Yeah. There it goes.
So yeah, he gotta get over the hump, man. Come on, Matt. And I mean it could be very possible that, you know, with him being in the Packers. You know, the Packers could turn it around next year.
Well, yeah, I think everybody's expecting that.
Everybody's expecting them to.
Yeah.
We'll see how they do in their first game. And
right.
if they can't do it, then I think Aaron Rodgers is done in Green Bay.
Ooh. Yeah, me too.
Ooh.
I think he is.
Yeah.
You don't give him two years, not when you're on the wrong side of 30.
Yep.
Ooh.
Yep. Man, I can agree with that.
Yeah. So anyway, let's talk about probably what is hands down the best moment of that Super Bowl, which is, of course, the 100-year commercial of the Super Bowl that ran during it. 2 minutes filled with football glory and people, and really guys making fun of themselves.
Yeah.
Which even makes it even more impressive, the fact that Roger Goodell would go at this. And who among us doesn't want to see Deion Sanders, while he's high-stepping, get slammed into a champagne tray,
right? Man, listen.
It was Brian Urlacher who did it.
It was Urlacher who hit him, right? Yeah, okay.
It was Urlacher.
Listen, let me tell you guys something, man. For the last, I would say, 10 years or so, I will say that the Super Bowl commercials and maybe the halftime shows, it was okay. Of course, it was a lot of stuff surrounding Maroon 5 actually performing.
I'll be honest, I just watched the Super Bowl commercials just to see the new trailers for the Marvel movies.
For the Marvel movies, right. Yeah, I mean, but that's what
and
it is.
And we got
though,
one,
right?
Too. We got one.
Yeah, exactly. There were maybe two other commercials that might have stood out to me. There was a Pepsi commercial with Cardi B. I thought that was a pretty decent commercial. A commercial that a lot of men would have liked was the Zoe Kravitz commercial, where she's whispering into the microphone and she's telling you about this organic Michelob that's coming out. Right. You know, I think that's to the minds of men, right?
Right.
Yeah, Zoe Kravitz, Lenny Kravitz.
Yes, it's Lenny that.
It's Lenny. Yeah, yeah, he is.
He's up there, huh?
Yeah. Yep. And after you see that commercial, he probably would want to get away. Right.
That was.
I did a John Morgo then.
He did. Daniel made that joke.
I did a Morgo. But that NFL 100 commercial, to me, and I'm saying this on the air, it was the greatest Super Bowl commercial of all time to me. And we've had Butt Bowl commercial. You remember the Butt Bowl?
I remember Butt Bowl.
Yeah, we had that commercial and all of this stuff. And the Wah-Wah, we had those commercials and stuff. But there's nothing that tipped that NFL 100 commercial.
That was like a kind of a throwback to those Miller Lite commercials in the
70s. It was. It was.
We had all those guys. But yeah, we saw Deion Sanders get thrown into a champagne.
Tom Brady takes his rings off and gives them to young Baker Mayfield and say, here, hold these.
Patrick Mahomes
throwing, man, it was great.
The referee, Sarah Oliver, I think, yep, was there too, and it was great.
It was outstanding, man. I thought it was.
My one thing is the guy who's about to pile drive Terry Bradshaw, I would have rather that be Lawrence Taylor.
Lawrence Taylor, yeah.
That would have been great.
Was that Singletary who did that?
I don't know.
Singletary was the one that yelled fumble.
No, football.
Football, yeah.
Yeah, he was the one, his face is vibrating, yeah. He can't contain it, rips off his glasses, Clark Kent style, and goes, fumble!
Yeah, oh man, it was great.
And Marshawn Lynch was the one who destroyed the cake.
Exactly, and you know what? Fitting it would be Marshawn Lynch to actually start this whole thing, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought that was a tremendous commercial. Probably one of only three commercials out of 1,000 that were made.
I'm going in my mental Rolodex, my memory bank. I'm like, damn, have I seen a Super Bowl commercial better than that?
I can't think of one.
I've seen some. It was some good ones.
I mean, it's been some pretty decent ones over the years, but you know that I know it was one year. It used to be years where the Super Bowl commercials, man, they would take over.
Right.
You know, you couldn't leave, like, your seat and just watch it. Just like with the halftime shows. I mean, with the halftime shows, man, I mean, to me, Prince had a great halftime show. Of course, Michael Jackson's was iconic when he did it. I think he was here in Atlanta for that Super Bowl.
I think he was in L.A. for that.
Was he?
The only problem with Michael Jackson, is he goes through his stuff. And then someone gives him a mic, and he talks about his children charity or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, you just advertised to the whole world your lip syncing. The whole world now knows your lip syncing.
Oh man,
God, that's funny.
I didn't think about it like that.
I didn't either.
I like Whitney. This is the 91 Super Bowl when Whitney Houston sung
the national anthem.
Yeah,
that still holds iconic, man. But they said Gladys Knight did a tremendous job. I didn't get a chance to see it, but they said she did a wonderful job with the national anthem. Yeah, Whitney Houston's
they still play that.
They still play it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Remember when we used to call perimeter games?
Mm-hmm.
basketball games.
Yeah, they played it during that.
They would play it during that.
And I would make points. Right. Whoever that singer has got a big career from.
Yeah. Woo. I'm telling you. Man. But, you know, it was great. You know, like I said, the halftime show, I think a lot of people, what they would have wanted out of the halftime show, they were probably expecting. This is what I'm thinking. I'm guessing. You expecting maybe like an Outcast.
They wanted some sort of celebration of Atlanta as the cradle of hip hop.
Of hip hop. Exactly.
The R&B capital of the world, and we didn't get
and
that.
And we didn't get it. Yeah, we didn't get
we
the,
got Maroon
we
get, 5.
We got Maroon 5.
We're getting acts guaranteed to anger nobody.
Yeah,
to offend nobody.
Now, when Big Boy came out, Big Boy from Outkast, when he came out, it was tremendous.
Right.
It was great. Travis Scott had a pretty decent spot, you know. But, you know, it is what it is, man. Like I said, if I had to give an overall grade for the Super Bowl, when you count the game, commercials, halftime shows, and just the city in general, I would have to give it an A.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because of the city and the game itself.
Right.
You know, those just over trump everything that happened besides the halftime show and everything else. So I would give it an A.
Yeah. I caught the tail end of Maroon 5's
mm-hmm.
Performance. How long did they give Big Boy when he performed?
About maybe 5 or 10 minutes. Because it was still Maroon 5 show. Listen, this the main thing about hosting any shows or having any concerts is that your main talent is not supposed to be outshined by
whoever you bring out,
you know, and that's what everybody was saying.
Oh,
When you look at social media and stuff, that's what they were saying. Like, you know, Big Boy was the talk of the town.
Yeah, because I'm thinking they would have gave him more time, being that he's like, you know, it's only right they brought him out because, you know, being an Outkast is what put the South hip hop on the map
mm-hmm.
in '93. So you bring, Too Bad Andre didn't want to come out.
Right.
But I thought they would have given him a bigger set.
Or you could have given the set to, like, you know, ATL hip hop legends. You could have given it to Young Jeezy. Okay. It could have been Jeezy, T.I., Ludacris.
He had to bring Big Boy. Outkast,
Goody Mob. Those guys could have.
Had to be no guy.
Those guys could have been the ones.
And they did have Jermaine Dupri during the opening day, but he was across the street,
right? Yeah. Oh, I mean, listen, even Amigos, they're a hot commodity now. You know what I'm saying? Like, they could have torn the house down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so. I mean, but like I said before, look, Maroon 5, you don't realize how many hits that Maroon 5 have until you start listening to them.
Right.
And you're like, dang, they sung that too, didn't they? That was a pretty, you know, decent hit or whatnot. So, nothing against Maroon 5. It's a great, talented group.
But they're from California.
But they're from California,
exactly.
Yeah. So why would you bring them down for the halftime show?
Yeah.
Nothing against him, though.
By the way, the guy who is about ready to level Terry Bradshaw, Aaron Donald.
Yeah. See, they had it. And Dominican Sue was in it, too. So,
watching Ed Reed stalk LaDainian Tomlinson.
Oh, yeah. It brought back memories, didn't it? And congratulations to Ed Reed. To Ed Reed and Tony Gonzalez.
They're
in the Hall of Fame. First ballots, man.
Yep.
And now, guys, when we talk about the Hall of Fame now, we're talking about guys that we grew up watching. We grew up watching these guys, man. Yeah. And, man, if there's, I tell people all the time, and I'm an emotional guy, you know, I cried at my wedding, you know, so I normally cry at weddings, funerals, and the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. I think the last one I cried at was when Dion and Shannon got inducted into the Hall of Fame. And just to hear what they have to say,
right,
and how they got there and how they did that, man. It's going to be interesting to hear Ed Reed's story, hear Tony Gonzalez's story. Just all the guys. And let me get a list of Hall of Famers for this year. Ty Law is a Hall of Famer.
Ty Law. Isn't Gil Brandt, didn't he make it this year?
No.
Ooh. No, not that's not who I'm thinking of.
Let's see.
Nope, that's not what I want. as we do some quick typing.
Champ Bailey is one. Man, Champ Bailey, can you believe he's been?
Shout out to Denver.
Yeah, shout out to Denver, right?
And Georgia.
And Georgia, yep. So Champ Bailey is going. Now, of course, you got some player personnels.
And the founder category.
Yeah, in the founder category. Gil Brandt, who was vice president Gil for the Brandt. Dallas Cowboys. Right. Yep. Yeah, he's in there.
All right.
You know, I feel kind of like the old word. You know, I was up there sharing an Allen Iverson story.
Mm-hmm.
And just to think that Allen Iverson represents someone of the past, like,
such
a trendsetter, you know.
Yeah, but he was such a trendsetter, you know, with his style and his swag. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was like, man, we just witnessed that, man.
Yeah. You know? And I was discussing, you know, because, you know, a lot of rappers or a lot of basketball players who go on to rap, and I was like, you know, discuss how Allen Iverson is the reason why the dress code is in.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're talking about the best rappers that were sports players. And I was like, yeah, I think Allen Iverson's up there. And he's like, and I was talking to a young brother. He's from Detroit. I'm like, yeah, you know, Allen Iverson was actually, his album was so street.
How street was it?
This man, the NBA was like, yeah, right.
Right.
You know, because, you know, his he was talking about a lot of, you know, let's call it indictment music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for NBA, you know, the NBA is trying to maintain this good image and everything like that. It's like, wow.
Yeah, you're talking about Allen Iverson responsible for the NBA dress code. Yeah, like Latrell Sprewell responsible for the edict, you can't choke out a coach.
Coach. Oh, man. Poor PJ. Exactly.
Poor PJ.
So, here's the list of two Hall of Famers guys. Champ Bailey, Pat Bowlen, Gil Brandt, Tony Gonzalez, Ty Law, Kevin Maui. Kevin Maui. Yeah, I knew it was a lineman in there. I couldn't remember who it was. Ed Reed, and the senior finalist is Johnny Robinson.
So who's going to be the Hall of Fame game?
Ooh.
Chiefs and Redskins?
Chiefs and Redskins, yeah, maybe.
The politically incorrect game.
Yeah. If they want to get away from that, let's just say Bears, Falcons, or somebody.
Well, know? I hear they're going to move away from having New England start off the season and make it Bears-Packers for that Thursday opening night.
Thursday
night?
Why? Why would they do that?
100th year of NFL?
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
Oldest rivalry?
Oldest rivalry, why not? Yeah, yeah. Okay. That makes sense. And let New England open Sunday night.
Yeah, Sunday night.
You know, let them raise their banner Sunday night. Let's see, who would they? I would pit them against the Chiefs or the Steelers. One of those two teams, I would pit them against them. Then, you know what, John, I didn't think about that. That is interesting. The oldest rivalry in professional football, Bears-Packers, let's open it up. Or if you don't do that, put them on Sunday night, again, right, like you did last year.
Exactly.
Who were the original, let's see, the original six teams were the Bears, Packers, Browns.
Well, not the Browns. Not the Browns.
Browns didn't come until Paul Brown came. Then, hence their name.
1933?
Yeah. Was it? It might have been.
Well, the thing of it is, when you're talking about early NFL, when you're talking about early NFL history, you're talking about teams in Rockford, mm-hmm, and
it was six original teams, though.
Well, there were six original teams in the NHL.
Yeah, yeah, we know about that.
Right.
The original six for the NHL, but in the NFL, that's kind of hard to say.
Yes, because again, there was the AAFC,
mm-hmm,
that was going on, and that's where the Browns came in.
That's where the Browns came in. Yeah.
Yeah, because the AFL, the AFL, like a lot of your AFC teams, with the exception of the Browns, of course, who were a lot older, mm-hmm, that came by like, you know, at the 1960.
Yeah.
Right.
And then the merger happened in 70.
Yeah.
Happened in 70.
Okay, in 1920, the meeting was held of four teams in an auto showroom in Canton, Ohio. They created the American Professional Football Conference. The four teams were the Akron Pros, Canton Bulldogs, Cleveland Indians, Dayton Triangles. Believe me, you haven't seen anything until you've seen Lou Boudreau play quarterback. wrong. No, not those Cleveland Indians. No. There were some other people.
Yeah.
Now, they added in Hammond Pros, Muncie Flyers, and the Rochester Jeffersons.
Uh-huh. Uh-oh, you have a joke?
And they were moving on up.
Yeah.
The Rock Island Independence.
I knew it.
The Rock Island Independence, Decatur Staleys. Now, the Decatur Staleys, I think, became the Bears.
The Bears, yes, they did. The Decatur Staleys
and
did become the Bears.
And the Racine Chicago Cardinals. So they originally, they would become the Cardinals.
Yes.
All right, so let's see. It's just, it's not telling me who changed, it's not telling me who changed what. Okay, out of all those teams, only two remain, the Bears and the Cardinals.
Yep.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Now you got the original eight were the Giants, Bears, Cardinals, Packers, Lions, Redskins, Eagles, and Steelers. And from 1944, the ramp to 69, okay, there was the Browns, then, you know, 44. You got the Browns, Rams, 49ers, Vikings, Saints, Falcons, Cowboys.
Coach. Actually,
that's when the league started to really materialize.
Yeah. And then people started putting money in it.
Uh-huh.
Because college football has actually been around
longer than that.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It just wasn't, I guess it wasn't really any kind of money and going forward after college football, you know.
No, it wasn't. It was more about football than anything. Because Jackie Robinson played.
Right.
He played at UCLA.
Yeah.
For a while. A lot of people don't know that, but he was an outstanding college football star.
Yeah, they said his brother was even better than him.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And according to this, the Giants didn't start play until 25.
Yeah.
Redskins in 32. Mm-hmm. Packers in 21.
Okay.
Let's see. We already saw the Cardinals in 20. So, actually, if you want to do it, make the Cardinals and the Bears play each other.
There you go.
Because if I'm the Cardinals, I'm thinking to myself, what about us?
What about us? Yeah. I know we're terrible, but what about us?
Yeah, we belong here.
I'm about to say, the NFL demographic is like, what about you?
Yeah.
Get relevant. This ain't 2010.
And of course, I'm pretty sure just like the 75th anniversary where you saw a lot of teams wear old school jerseys.
Absolutely.
You're going to see that.
I love the old, especially.
Oh, yeah. Are we for real?
Yeah, we're going to see it.
I love the Green Bay Packer jerseys.
Oh, yeah.
Disgusting. Brett Favre is a great idea. Oh, no, wait a minute. That's his helmet.
That's his helmet, yeah. The Lions are going to bring back their old jerseys. Yeah. New England's going to bring out the pink colors. Yeah.
And the center on the helmet?
Yep.
The center on the helmet's great.
Yep. They're gonna do all of that, man. It's coming.
I maintain that the best old school uniforms that exist
is the Chargers powder blue. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, sir. We got the best ones.
Now, I hope what we do is we bring those red jerseys back with the red helmets.
Okay,
The black jerseys with the red helmets. Now, I want all red, okay?
Man, who's the person designing a lot of these old uniforms back in the day? Like, did somebody think those Bears uniforms were in? Disgusting. I mean, they had to strike. Ugh.
You would have liked it back then, man. You would have loved it. I think I would.
Basketball uniforms even worse, though. Some of those old school basketball uniforms.
Oh, I know. Oh, I love the old Los Angeles Clipper cheerwine uniforms.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, yeah.
You know the ones I'm talking
about?
Yes, I do.
I even like the... What was that? Well, the Kings didn't come out until, what, the 80s? But they had those powder blue uniforms. The Kings did. Yeah.
I think the Kings used to... Were they used to play in Buffalo?
No, you're thinking of the Clippers.
The Clippers.
The Clippers
played in Buffalo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had Bob McAdoo.
Right.
Yes. Yep.
The Kings, they used...
Were they in Kansas City?
I want to say Kansas City. They might have even been Rochester.
It might have been Rochester, yeah.
So the small market just got phased. Like, the small market got phased out to the point now New Orleans, which is like maybe like the largest city in the state, is a small market team.
Well, it's the smallest market in one of the smaller markets in the NFL, yeah.
Yeah.
Worse than Indiana?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Man. And speaking of New Orleans, man.
Uh-oh.
Let me tell you, man.
Let's segue.
I feel disrespected.
Okay.
You mean to tell me that there's no team that was going to offer... New Orleans will not get a package like what the Lakers were offering them in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
They will not. And being that Anthony Davis specifically stated, I think the closest team that will offer New Orleans that type of package would be the Boston Celtics, which they don't... Unless they win the finals, that's the only way that Kyrie will get super maxed out.
Right.
The only way. Other than that, if Boston does not win the finals, which they will not, Kyrie may not get maxed up, which means he will leave. And Boston which they're starting five outside Kyrie Irving, is proven.
Mm-hmm.
Now they could do some damage in the East. They're not giving up anybody. Not to get Anthony Davis, who said on record that I would not stay in Boston based on what happened to IT. Which he's not going to stay anyway, but he's just going to use it as a reason.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, he's the only place I'm going is LA.
So let me ask you this. Did you like that package? Because Kuzma, Ball, I think Kuzma and Ball were in that package. And then they were giving up like two or three first rounds. So you didn't like that deal.
That was doing too much.
You thought that was too much?
That's way too extreme. But we got to look at it like this here, though. If they would have got AD, all right, that's our power forward slash center, power forward, because you put him on a block, he'd get pushed around a little bit. But this is 2019, though, so, you know, there's not much center work going on anyway. We have AD play. We have AD at the 4-5, or Tyson Chandler and JaVale. We just bring out Melo. They're bringing Melo in.
We keep forgetting he's still around.
Yeah.
You know, and then so we have AD, LeBron, Melo, and have Rondo quarterbacking.
But you see, I think y'all would have to wait until the season is over with. Because, I mean, clearly, I mean, let's just face it. The Lakers did not. I think the Lakers lost in the free agency, in the trade deadline. Because they did not get the guy that they should have gotten. You know, for one, they didn't get Davis. Okay, right. If I had, man, it's three winners out in the East. Well, I thought that, and they just so happened to be the top teams in the East who actually could share the title of winning a trade deadline: Milwaukee, Toronto, and Philadelphia. Philadelphia has a complete package now. When you bring in Tobias Harris from the Clippers, who actually was their best player, but now you put him in the shuffle with Embiid and Simmons and Jimmy Butler and all those guys and J.J. Redick and those guys. Philadelphia can make a run, and they can make a serious run. Another team, because and I'm looking at these teams, Leon and John, simply because of what they needed, and they got what they needed. The Raptors got Mark Gasol. And Mark Gasol can still play basketball. I don't care what nobody says. He is still a factor. And now you've got that big who could pass the ball, who is very who can actually spread the floor out.
Y'all can play five out now.
You can play five out now, right? So now you add him with Leonard and Kyle Lowry to the mix. Now we've got something good here with Toronto. The other team is Milwaukee. They added a shooter. They got Mirotic from New Orleans. They got him from New Orleans. So they get Mirotic, and now to add along with two All-Stars with Middleton and Greek Freak, now Milwaukee wants to stay number one in the Eastern Conference. So those three teams actually did it for me as far as the trade deadline goes.
It's like now the East is becoming the West, meaning – you know how at one point in time the East, you know, it's only really been, if you look at over the past 10 years, only been two teams that came out the East. And one
any team LeBron was on.
Absolutely.
And
Boston.
In Boston.
Do you think Adam Silver, it's Adam Silver's nightmare that Milwaukee would represent, would get in the NBA championship?
Yeah, but listen.
You're talking like such a small market?
Yes.
But listen. I'm pretty sure they would want Boston to get in there.
Yeah, they want to see Boston Golden State.
Do you want to see a Boston Golden State final? Or your dream would be to see another L.A.-Boston final. You know, hey, you want to see something like that. But, hey, man, listen, if Milwaukee is as good as it gets, then, hell, what are we going to say about that, right?
I don't know if Milwaukee is as good as it gets, though. Like, the East is now
in. Well, yeah, the verdict is still out on them.
The verdict is still out on a lot of people. Like, Boston lost to the Lakers a couple nights ago.
Yeah, and then I don't know if you saw this, guys, but last night we saw two incredible comebacks. The Thunder were down by 26 and to the Rockets and came back and beat them on the road. The same thing happened to Boston. They were down by 20. They were up by 28, and the Clippers came back and beat them.
Really?
So, yeah, it's something else. And I think they're getting into this stretch run, and everybody's trying to make it to All-Star Weekend because All-Star Weekend is next weekend. So everybody's trying to just make it to that break, to that resting period.
That week off,
you know. So everybody's trying to make it there.
Right. And at one point in time, you know, like I said, you already, like, what I mean by, with the East becoming the West, it's like, You know that Golden State's gonna come out the West.
Oh yeah, without question.
Yes.
They are head above shoulders.
And everybody.
Everybody, man.
And then this, like, over the past 10 years, you knew LeBron's gonna come out the East.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even last year, when the Cleveland appeared to be struggling the better part of the season,
mm-hmm.
they came into the playoffs. They were in a dogfight with Indiana.
Right.
You know, 7 games. But then the next round with Toronto, which was the number one team for the better part of the year in the East, swept them.
Yep.
And then they went to Boston. Great series. You know, it came down to, you know,
yeah,
a few seconds. Those guys, I think, were 2 minutes away from beating LeBron. And it just didn't happen.
And it didn't happen. Yep. And in that series, that was a funny series, too, because nobody couldn't get a road win until game 7, which was happened to be Cleveland, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So they knew how to do it then. Man, I'm going to tell you guys, this, the NBA is going to be very interesting down the stretch, man.
Yes.
The buyout market is still open right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, Melo just might be going to the Lakers, but, you know, there's one buyout that everybody needs to be looking at. And DeAndre Jordan's time in the league, he's at 10 years plus. I don't know if he wants to be in New York.
No, he doesn't. The only good thing that's coming out of New York right now is Dennis Smith and what he's about to do at the dunk contest next weekend. That's the only thing that's going to happen with them.
Rob Pelinka,
mm-hmm.
Magic Johnson, if you're listening, DeAndre Jordan doesn't want to be in New York. Okay, we whiffed on Anthony Davis. Whiffed.
See, Go ahead.
We whiffed on Anthony Davis. Now, can DeAndre Jordan stretch your offense? No. Does LeBron often play with a shooter, with a big that is a shooter? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But what DeAndre Jordan does is make sure that the opposing team gets nothing indoors.
Do you think he's still an elite? I wouldn't call him an elite player.
I can't call him elite either because he can't.
Yeah.
He's like 70-30. He's like a Dwight Howard.
Do you think that he can still play to the level that he played a couple of years ago when he had Chris Paul? Do you think he can play at that level?
Yeah, because the reason why he was playing at such a high level
mm-hmm.
was because you had players like Blake Griffin and Chris Paul around him that were helping free him up. You know, DeAndre Jordan has never really been a great offensive threat.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, he boasted the best shooting percentage in the NBA because all his shots were 5 feet and in.
Yeah.
You know, do we really – now, let me go off and say this. We have Tyson Chandler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think DeAndre's good, you know, it's good talk and everything like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know what I'm saying, what's really good between him and Tyson Chandler?
Yeah.
Let's keep it real. Tyson is not – is he going to stretch your offense out?
No. They can both alley. They can both catch lobs like it's nothing.
Yeah. I guess, you know, with DeAndre Jordan, is like he's like the iPhone 6. You know what I'm saying? You know, Apple, Windows 9, not Windows 8.
Mm-hmm. He's the upgrade.
He's the upgrade, right?
Yeah, you know, so, you know, unfortunately, at the direction NBA is going with, you know, let's keep it honest. They're going for, they're trying to go for positionless basketball.
You can put whatever 5 people you want on the court at one time. Whatever gives you the best chance of winning. 5 guards, 5 forwards, 4 guards, 3 forwards, a guard, and the popcorn vending guy, you know, whatever brings you in. And you're seeing that all the way, you're seeing that through every level.
Yeah, even in college basketball.
Even in college basketball, you're seeing these diversified lineups. If you got 3 quick guards, put them out there, run the other opposing team ragged. If you don't have guards, but you got big size, you put 3 forwards in, then it's 3 centers in, and just bully others into submission.
You look at Duke's lineup. You know, Zion Williamson is, what, 6'7", but he's 285. But length-wise, like, as far as lankiness, Reddish and Barrett might be a little taller.
Mm-hmm.
As far as when you look at his wingspan.
Yeah.
So, you know, but they all 5 of those guys, and when you put Jones in the mix, they could spread the floor, and they can run you out. Everybody can play a damn point guard now.
Yeah, and that's what I'm looking at. You know, you got to be good for – I think in the NBA now you have to be good. You have to be good for these 45 feet against professional defense when handling the ball. Mm-hmm. Now you got a few players above 6'8" that are good for 90. I believe Brandon Ingram on the Lakers. He could run a little point. He has a handle. LeBron is definitely he's like the largest. He's like the tallest player since Magic. That's good for 90.
Right.
You know, full court. But it's not, even Kevin Durant, he's good for about 45. Mm-hmm. But you put some professional defense on him full court, he'll become a turnover machine. Same thing with Giannis. I think Giannis is good for about 45. Klay Thompson, he's good for about 45, maybe. His handle on a professional level, I guess that's what separates Steph, you know, from, you know, whom can create. I think Steph can create from like 35.
Yes. Which is special. I agree with that.
We've never seen that before.
Nope.
Consistently, you know, you got the Iversons who he could create and everything like that. Your Tim Hardaways, I seen him do it, but I'm talking about consistently at shooting at above 45%. You know,
yep.
So, but that's I guess you know it's Zion. You know, you think Zion is good for 90 against professional defense? Because at being 6'7", he's not that tall for yep. You know he that you shoot Michael Carter Williams is like 6'6" point guard. You know,
but he is box office. Isn't it?
Yeah,
Zion the most exciting
against 19-year-olds.
Yeah, man. Right.
But how is he going to fare against 25, 30-year-olds,
right?
Who are doing this to pay rent and exactly. Pay mortgage and paying families, yeah. Taking care of families.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And you think Zion isn't? No, I'm sorry. I don't know. I don't know that for sure. I don't know that. That's just print. I'm sorry. Don't know that for sure. Nothing's been proven.
John's up like 5-1 on me in the joke department right now. But he wins that every damn time we get on the air, right?
Right.
Well, we're coming down to our last couple minutes here in the last three guys to do a podcast. So once again, we'll turn it over to the various esteemed gentlemen of our panel and see what they want to get off their chest. Daniel, go first.
All right. So, guys, you know, of course, it's Black History Month or whatnot. But needless to say, I have to give a salute. And my condolences to his family, the late, great Frank Robinson. He passed away earlier this week at the age of 83. And guys, for all of you baseball fans and for all of you young baseball fans who don't know who Frank Robinson is, let me just tell you some of the barriers he broke. Well, first, I'll give you his numbers. He had a career batting average of .294. He had 2,943 hits, 586 home runs, which at the time of his retirement was only behind Willie Mays, Babe Ruth, and Hank Aaron. So the guy could hit. As a player, okay, because he did some stuff as a manager, right?
Right.
14-time All-Star. He won the World Series in 1966 and 1970. He is the first and only man in baseball history to win MVP in both leagues. He won the National League MVP in 1961. He won the American League MVP in 1966. That year, he was also World Series MVP. He was a Triple Crown winner in 1966. I think arguably 1966 might have been his best year. He won the Rookie of the Year in 1956. Now, this was around the time, this was maybe, 9 or 10 years after Jackie Robinson had broke the color barrier. So he was, of course, an important figure. He is a baseball Hall of Famer. But one thing that he did, and he said this oftentimes, that he wished Jackie was here. Because I remember Jackie Robinson saying, like, maybe 10 days before he died, that he would be more impressed if he saw, when he looked down at third base line and saw a black face managing. And he actually got that opportunity. I think it was in 1981 where he got that opportunity. He became the first African-American manager actually it was in 1975. He became the first African-American manager to manage in the majors. He managed the Cleveland Indians from 75 to 77. He also became the first African-American manager to manage in the National League, where he managed the San Francisco Giants in 1981. Folks, if you haven't watched tape on him, I suggest you do. If young hitters out there, if you want to watch tape, you want to watch a guy who just played the game because he absolutely loved it, it's Frank Robinson. And he was as good as he gets. He was a great man. He was a pioneer, especially in our history, in black history. So I give a salute to him. Salute his family. May he rest in peace. Frank Robinson, folks, outstanding, great legendary, whatever you want to say, everything great about him was baseball. He was baseball. Frank Robinson.
Man, that's, you should have went last.
I know.
All right. I like my last will be on literacy, everybody. Literacy. First of all, I feel like, you know, based on Daniel's soliloquy on Frank Robinson, I was like, dang, I'm talking about literacy. This man just broke down, you know, one of the greatest players that this game has seen. You know, this man right here, you know, Frank Robinson is a legend in Baltimore for the Orioles. Am I correct?
Yeah, the Orioles, and he played for the Reds as well.
But I'd say literacy, everybody, because until the NFL becomes literate in reading defenses, Tom Brady will continue to dominate, man. Man. We got to get together. We got to get together, everybody. Eric LaFleur, I'm calling you out, man. You got to get it together. You know, I felt disrespected all throughout the playoffs. You know, I'm looking at my team look very dilapidated and petrified against the Patriots, and then it happens again with I'm upset. You know, with the Rams. So we got to get together in NFL. You know, we got to get paid millions of dollars. I need more time in the film room, because there's no reason in the world that Bill Belichick should take a 40-year-old quarterback and run circles around rookies. It should be happening. So that's my spiel on that.
Okay.
Literacy, everybody.
All right. Well.
Literacy.
Well, the tone in our discussions did a complete 180.
Yeah, it did.
Another complete 180.
All right, here we go.
You do a complete another. Well, this has been the winter of Vanderbilt basketball discontent. The team is 0-10 on the men's side, even though they were thought by many to be a sleeper pick for quite possibly the Sweet 16 or the Elite 8, But when Darius Garland went down with a season-ending injury, he decided to go pro. And also, Bryce Drews just have not been able to get any sort of rhythm going with Vanderbilt men's basketball. Now, the women's team, they haven't been doing so well either. They only have one conference win. But as bad as that is, it got inconceivably worse over the last week. And it kind of got, not only did it get worse, it kind of got worse in a morbidly, in a very morbid, ironic way. And what I mean by that is Malcolm Turner, who is going to be Vanderbilt's new athletic director, started last week for David Williams. Now, David Williams was having breakfast at the Pancake Pantry. I think this was Wednesday. Pancake Pantry, if you don't know Vanderbilt and its location, it's on 21st, maybe a mile from campus. It is an institution in Vanderbilt, especially for breakfast, to have breakfast. It's kind of like a Waffle House, only in one location.
Yeah.
It's very much there. Well, Mr. Williams, who had just retired February 1st, had a seizure in the Pancake Pantry, and he was rushed to Vanderbilt Medical Center, where, unfortunately, he passed away just a few days after after he retired, and ironically enough, the day of his retirement dinner at Vanderbilt, where everybody was going to come down to honor him, including Coach James Franklin, who's now coaching at Penn State. They were all going to come, and suddenly this party becomes a wake in almost a funeral atmosphere. Now, Mr. Williams was the first African-American athletic director in the Southeastern Conference. The pall he cast, his shadow he cast over the Vanderbilt community was enormous. He was getting all sorts of best wishes, condolences from everywhere, everybody he touched, every player, coach, administrator, every single person in the Southeast Conference who had sort of touched knew what a class gentleman and figure he was and how important he was to the Vanderbilt community. So it just leaves a very big psychic scar over the entire administration, and we here want to express our sincere condolences to the Williams family and to the Vanderbilt community as well, in light of this very tragic instance. Again, David Williams passing away just mere days after he formally retired as Vanderbilt athletic director, almost like what Paul Bear Bryant what happened to him when he retired and did not then passed away about a month later.
Yep.
Again, passing away the morning of his retirement dinner, which just seems to be like a cruel joke that fate has seemed to play on the Commodore faithful. And we want to have a moment of silence for that. All right, well, we don't mean to end on such a down note, but it was just that a lot of things were going on as we were talking Super Bowl and NBA. We'll be back with you next week talking all things NBA All-Star Game, and we'll also be discussing Major League Baseball. Spring training is coming about. It will pitchers and catchers will report very soon. So we want to thank all of you for listening to The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast. We'll be with you next week for Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. I'm John Morgo. Appreciate your continued listening to us, your continued to download us on the internet. Appreciate all you are, all you've been doing for us. You're the reasons we continue to put out product week after week. We'll see you next week. Have a good night, everybody.
Literacy.